If I was University Times, stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. The American general overseeing the U.S.-led coalition support of the Iraqi offensive to retake Mosul says they're making rapid initial progress against the Islamic State defenders. Major General Gary Valesky spoke Wednesday with reporters.
The Iraqis are ahead of where I thought they would be when this operation started. They continue to move and continue to liberate villages. I think the last count yesterday was 13, and they continue to move towards Mosul.
Valesky said the enemy's response thus far has mostly been indirect fire as they move back toward Mosul for defense of the city that they captured more than 2 years ago. So far, he said, civilians have avoided the fighting and, in fact, are helping Iraqi forces.
We've not seen large numbers of displaced persons leaving these villages. In fact, a lot of the villages, as the Iraqi security forces have come in, have helped the Iraqis. There was some villages where the people came out and showed where Daesh was, which was really encouraging for the Iraqi security forces.
As for how long the operation will take, Valesky said the enemy has prepared for this fight for 2 years. He expects resistance to increase the closer Iraqi Kurdish forces get to Mosul. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari told the more than 20 Chibok girls rescued in recent days the government will intensify efforts to liberate the rest of them abducted by Boko Haram more than 2 years ago.
We shall redouble efforts to ensure that we fulfill our pledge of bringing the remaining girls back home.
Nearly 300 girls were taken from their school in 2014 in Chibok in northeast Borno State. Last week, the rebels released the 21 girls in the first negotiated release brokered by the International Red Cross and Swiss government. This is VOA News. A 72-hour ceasefire brokered by the UN that is renewable went into effect late Wednesday in Yemen. The UN hopes it will allow humanitarian workers to deliver badly needed supplies and pave the way for possible peace talks. Jamie McGoldrick is the UN humanitarian coordinator for Yemen.
We have large-scale humanitarian operations underway in this country throughout many parts of it, 75%. And during the cessation of hostilities, we would hope to do our best to deliver assistance to those in areas where we haven't been able to reach for some time. So that's our ambition.
The war in Yemen began in 2014 when Shia rebels known as Houthis, based in the north, seized the capital Sana'a and swept across much of the poor Arabian Peninsula country. A Saudi-led coalition intervened the following March in support of the government of President Abdurrabbu Mansour Hadi. Some 4,000 civilians have been killed in the fighting. The two main U.S. presidential candidates clashed late Wednesday in their final televised debate in Las Vegas over gun rights, abortion, and immigration. Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton was asked what she would do to help the economy recover.
My plan is based on growing the economy, giving middle-class families many more opportunities. I want us to have the biggest jobs program since World War II, jobs in infrastructure and advanced manufacturing. I think we can compete with high-wage countries, and I believe we should.
Her Republican counterpart Donald Trump warned of the cost to the Clinton economic plan.
Her plan is going to raise taxes and even double your taxes. Her tax plan is a disaster. And she can say all she wants about college tuition, but the rest of the public's going to be paying for it. We will have a massive, massive tax increase under Hillary Clinton's plan.
The two candidates clashed over Russian President Vladimir Putin's influence, with Clinton calling Trump his puppet, the New York businessman countering by saying Mr. Putin has outsmarted his opponent while she was Secretary of State. The government of Mozambique and the opposition Renamo Party resumed peace talks following the murder of a senior Renamo official by unidentified gunmen. Jeremias Pondeka was a member of a joint commission established to find ways to end the long-running standoff between the two sides. The commission so far has failed to reach agreement on Renamo's demand for six provincial governors and inclusion of its militia into the country's security forces. Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte met his Chinese counterpart Xi Jinping in Beijing Thursday as his new government seeks closer trade ties and an easing of tensions over a maritime dispute in the South China Sea. They were to hold talks and sign a series of cooperation documents. He signaled a shift away from the U.S., a long-standing defense treaty ally. A European space lander has apparently touched down on the surface of Mars, but is emitting no signal, raising questions whether it survived the landing. Meanwhile, a U.S. spacecraft Juno has gone into safe mode and shut off its cameras and instruments. The solar-powered Juno has been orbiting Jupiter since July. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 20th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Democrat Hillary Clinton and Republican Donald Trump have had their third and final debate in this year's U.S. presidential election.
They're coming in illegally. Drugs are pouring in through the border. We have no country if we have no border. Hillary wants to give amnesty. She wants to have open borders. Now, I want to build the wall. We need the wall. The Border Patrol, ICE, they all want the wall.
Thus, Republican Party presidential candidate Donald Trump. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari says the government will adopt the 21 Chibok girls rescued last week from Boko Haram. A Nigerian activist brings together displaced poor Boko Haram victims. And the DRC capital, Kinshasa, was quiet yesterday during an anti-government strike.
The main opposition coalition, the Rassemblement, called the strike to demand that President Joseph Kabila step down in December at the end of his second and under the Constitution final term.
That's viewers William Klaus in Kinshasa. And the UN Children's Fund says a drop in the price of vaccine will save the lives of millions of children. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Democratic Party candidate Hillary Clinton and Republican Party candidate Donald Trump have had their third and final debate in this year's U.S. presidential election. Some of the topics included debt and entitlement and immigration, the economy, the Supreme Court, and some foreign hotspots. Trump reiterated his campaign promise to build a border wall.
They're coming in illegally. Drugs are pouring in through the border. We have no country if we have no border. Hillary wants to give amnesty. She wants to have open borders. As you know, the Border Patrol agent, 16,500 plus ICE last week, endorsed me. First time they've ever endorsed a candidate. I was up in New Hampshire the other day. The biggest complaint they have, it's with all of the problems going on in the world, many of the problems caused by Hillary Clinton and by Barack Obama, all of the problems, their single biggest problem is heroin that pours across our southern borders, just pouring and destroying their youth. It's poisoning the blood of their youth and plenty of other people. We have to have strong borders. We have to keep the drugs out of our country. We are right now, we're getting the drugs, they're getting the cash. We need strong borders. We cannot give amnesty. Now, I want to build the wall. We need the wall. The Border Patrol, ICE, they all want the wall. We stop the drugs. We shore up the border. One of my first acts will be to get all of the drug lords, all of the bad ones. We have some bad, bad people in this country that have to go out. We're going to get them out. We're going to secure the border. And once the border is secured, at a later date, we'll make a determination as to the rest.
For her part, Hillary Clinton said she is for better border security, but she said Trump's plan to deport millions of undocumented residents would break up families.
I don't want to rip families apart. I don't want to be sending parents away from children. I don't want to see the deportation force that Donald has talked about in action in our country. We have 11 million undocumented people. They have 4 million American citizen children, 15 million people. He said as recently as a few weeks ago in Phoenix that every undocumented person would be subject to deportation. Now, here's what that means. It means you would have to have a massive law enforcement presence, where law enforcement officers would be going school to school, home to home, business to business, rounding up people who are undocumented. And we would then have to put them on trains, on buses to get them out of our country. I think that is an idea that is not in keeping with who we are as a nation. I think it's an idea that would rip our country apart. I have been for border security for years. I voted for border security in the United States Senate. And my comprehensive immigration reform plan, of course, includes border security. But I want to put our resources where I think they're most needed, getting rid of any violent person, anybody who should be deported, we should deport them.
Clinton deflected her use of a private email server while she was Secretary of State and called on Trump to publicly condemn Russia's hacking of the emails of Americans.
The Russian government has engaged in espionage against Americans. They have hacked American websites, American accounts of private people, of institutions. Then they have given that information to WikiLeaks for the purpose of putting it on the internet. This has come from the highest levels of the Russian government, clearly from Putin himself, in an effort, as 17 of our intelligence agencies have confirmed, to influence our election. So I actually think the most important question of this evening, Chris, is finally, will Donald Trump admit and condemn that the Russians are doing this and make it clear that he will not have the help of Putin in this election, that he rejects Russian espionage against Americans, which he actually encouraged in the past.
Trump denied Russia was hacking the emails of Americans to support his candidacy. He said Russia does not respect former Secretary Clinton.
I don't know Putin. He said nice things about me. If we got along well, that would be good. If Russia and the United States got along well and went after ISIS, that would be good. He has no respect for her. He has no respect for our president. And I'll tell you what, we're in very serious trouble because we have a country with tremendous numbers of nuclear warheads, 1,800, by the way, where they expanded and we didn't, 1,800 nuclear warheads, and she's playing chicken. Look, Putin, everything I see, has no respect for this person.
Well, that's because he'd rather have a puppet as president of
the United States. No puppet.
And it's pretty clear.
You're the puppet.
It's pretty clear you won't admit
that
the Russians have engaged in cyber attacks against the United States of America, that you encouraged espionage against our people, that you are willing to spout the Putin line, sign up for his wish list, break up NATO, do whatever he wants to do, and that you continue to get help from him because he has a very clear favorite in this race.
Mr. Trump said the appointment of new justices on the Supreme Court was important to the 2016 election. He promised to appoint conservative pro-life judges who will interpret the U.S. Constitution the way the nation's founders wanted it interpreted.
We need a Supreme Court that, in my opinion, is going to uphold the Second Amendment and all amendments, but the Second Amendment, which is under absolute siege. I believe if my opponent should win this race, which I truly don't think will happen, we will have a Second Amendment, which will be a very, very small replica of what it is right now. But I feel that it's absolutely important that we uphold because of the fact that it is under such trauma. I feel that the justices that I am going to appoint, and I've named 20 of them, the justices that I'm going to appoint will be pro-life. They will have a conservative bent. They will be protecting the Second Amendment. They are great scholars in all cases, and they are people of tremendous respect. They will interpret the Constitution the way the founders wanted it interpreted, and I believe that's very, very important. I don't think we should have justices appointed that decide what they want to hear.
Secretary Clinton said she will appoint justices who will stand up for women's rights, gays, and the American people, not corporations and the wealthy.
You know, I think when we talk about the Supreme Court, it really raises the central issue in this election. Namely, what kind of country are we going to be? What kind of opportunities will we provide for our citizens? What kind of rights will Americans have? And I feel strongly that the Supreme Court needs to stand on the side of the American people, not on the side of the powerful corporations and the wealthy. For me, that means that we need a Supreme Court that will stand up on behalf of women's rights, on behalf of the rights of the LGBT community. But I feel that at this point in our country's history, it is important that we not reverse marriage equality, that we not reverse Roe v. Wade, that we stand up against Citizens United, we stand up for the rights of people in the workplace, that we stand up and basically say the Supreme Court should represent all of us.
That was Democratic Party presidential candidate Hillary Clinton speaking Wednesday night during the third and final debate in the 2016 U.S. presidential election. You also heard Republican Party candidate Donald Trump. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, October 20th. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. The streets of the Democratic Republic of Congo's capital, Kinshasa, were quiet on Wednesday after the opposition called for a general strike. The main opposition coalition is protesting a deal signed earlier this week between President Joseph Kabila and a smaller opposition platform that would postpone elections by nearly 2 years and leave Kabila in office in the interim. William Klaus reports from Kinshasa.
On Wednesday, Kinshasa experienced a so-called Dead City Day for the third time this year. It is similar to a general strike and designed to show the population's discontent with the government. Children are supposed to stay away from school and adults from work. The main opposition coalition, the Rassemblement, called the strike to demand that President Joseph Kabila step down in December at the end of his second and under the constitution final term.
La ville morte, moi je le soutiens. C'est une ville morte pour nous.
Near the central market, a young man called Kabir Ndai says Kinshasa supports the strike because it is for them. It is because the people are unhappy with the leaders of the country. Observing the strike is a sacrifice, Ndai admits, but a patriotic sacrifice. Kinshasa's normally chaotic early morning streets were quiet and nearly empty. Shops were sealed off with steel doors and public buses operated a reduced service, carrying only a few passengers. But towards midday, VOA saw many market traders, money changers and mobile credit vendors working, and some shops were opening as well. Kinshasa is a city of more than 10 million people, the vast majority poor and only a fraction with salaried employment. Taking a day off work, therefore, could mean a day without food, or for the fortunate few with salaries, risk punishment. Several state employees said they had been instructed to work during the strike, but would not provide any further detail.
La ville morte d'aujourd'hui est... Nous, on n'est pas satisfait, puis chez nous...
At work crafting baskets, carpenter Herman Abanda says the strike is a bad idea. He says for the little people in Congo, everyday life means going out and looking for something to eat. He said the country's politicians should sort out this crisis among themselves so that the little people do not suffer. Last month, street demonstrations resulted in dozens of deaths as security forces and protesters clashed. There had been fears similar problems might arise on Wednesday. In the Limite neighbourhood, an opposition stronghold, police used tear gas to disperse a group of opposition-supporting young men. But calm soon returned and the strike appears to have remained free of violence in the capital. Kabila's ruling coalition had called on the people of Kinshasa to ignore the strike, warning them a day without work is a day lost for the electoral process. William Clouds for VOA News, Kinshasa.
Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari has told the 21 Chibok girls who were released by Boko Haram last week that the Nigerian government will adopt them and be responsible for their education and future careers. This came after the president Wednesday met with the 21 girls in Abuja. Galba Shehu, senior special assistant on media and publicity to President Buhari, said the president promised the girls that his government will continue to work for the release of the remaining girls who are still in Boko Haram captivity. Shehu said there was no quid pro quo leading to the release of the 21 girls, but he said the government promised to continue its two-track approach in dealing with the militant group. The military campaign and negotiations, which he notes, were responsible for the release of the 21 girls.
He welcomed them very warmly. He expressed his happiness that they are back and said the government will continue to work for the release of all the others in the hands of Boko Haram. It is important that he has given the indication that the government is literally adopting all of them. Government will have responsibility for their education, for their future career, and the choices they will be making.
As you mentioned, he pledged to bring the remaining girls back home. How is he going to be doing this? This brings to the question whether there was any quid pro quo for the release of these 21.
Well, you know that the government is pursuing the recovery of the girls on two tracks. The armed exercise, the military attacks and all of that have not ended. The military have not been recalled from the northeast. They are still active And then the second track, of course, is the line of a negotiation, which has yielded this 21 girls. Was there any quid pro quo? Not to my knowledge. As far as I know, the understanding I have is that there is a wish on the part of the Boko Haram to establish credibility with the Nigerian government in the negotiation that they want to see take place. The information I have is that these girls have been released, you know, to come forward to tell the story of what they left and who they left behind. Apparently, to give indication that, of course, there are many more of them who are there and they are ready to be released, the government is committed to the negotiation.
Have you been able to see the girls yourself personally?
Obviously. I was in the room when the president met them.
Has there been any change in the physical appearance of the girls? I mean, some of them might have already perhaps grown up now. Is that correct?
Obviously, yes. Well, not that one had seen them before their capture. But if any set of people are looking emaciated, obviously looking underfed, and perhaps lacking in good health, these are things that nobody can hide from public view. So it's pretty evident that they had been through rough times. In fact, they had, in their own expressions, said clearly that they had suffered a severe shortage of food while in detention. And from the accounts given, this set of girls were not subjected to sexual abuse or any form of maltreatment. One of them had a baby, that was clear, or just one. But all the others looked quite young and certainly nothing to indicate that they had been subjected to maltreatment in terms of especially sexual abuse.
From the perspective of President Buhari, is the release of these girls, of the freedom of these 21 girls, is it being seen from your side as a victory, or do you feel there's much that your government has to do?
Well, nobody is oblivious of the enormous challenges that lie ahead. You are getting back about 10% of what you have lost. Beyond that, the president has never lost sight of the fact that more than 30,000 fellow citizens have been killed through the Boko Haram terrorism. And you have 2 million Nigerians in camps, internally displaced by persons camps, without homes and the communities to go back. So there is a joy and celebration, but it is much subdued given this context that I just mentioned to you.
Galbraith Shehu is the Senior Special Assistant on Media and Publicity to President Muhammadu Buhari of Nigeria. You are speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. A woman in northeast Nigeria has made it her mission to help people displaced and impoverished by the Boko Haram conflict. From Maiduguri, Chika Udwa brings us the story of Hajia Hawa.
Hajia Hawa is passing out vouchers for free food. Hungry boys and girls run to her. Many of them have not eaten a real meal in days. A person who has the voucher can come to Hawa's house to get free food for 6 months. This is not an NGO. It's what Hawa describes simply as doing God's work.
I'm Hajia Hawa. I'm suffering for people who need help.
As more people come, the crowd becomes unruly. Hawa tries to leave, but it's hard to get away. Sometimes tussles break out. Hawa is used to this. Hawa's husband went missing in 2014. She suspects he was killed by Boko Haram militants. The Boko Haram conflict has killed an estimated 20,000 people and driven an estimated 1 million displaced Nigerians into Maiduguri. Wherever Hawa goes, people flock to meet her. She gives out money, food vouchers, clothes. She pays for her acts of kindness by selling plots of her father's land.
Hajia Hawa gave me a sewing machine, and she always gives me food to eat. Nobody else is helping us. Hajia Hawa is our father, mother, everything for us.
Back at home, hundreds of people are waiting. Today, they will eat yam and soup. Street beggars contribute their earnings to this communal effort and look to Hawa as their leader. She says she too is a beggar. Sometimes she goes to her wealthy friends to ask for help. She does not get help from the government. She has a roster of nearly 6,000 people who depend on her.
Even now, if I tell these people to leave me, they cannot leave me. We have been together for a long time. We love each other. No matter how we suffer, we will stay together.
A man blesses Hawa in the Kanuri tradition. We support you 100%, he says. Powerful men have neglected us, and you have come to our aid. Hawa comes home with a new bag of rice, and everyone is happy. Chika Odua for VOA News, Maiduguri.
The United Nations Children's Fund says a steep drop in the price of a crucial childhood vaccine will prevent millions of deaths in dozens of the world's poorest countries. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The UN Children's Fund reports 1.5 million children under 5 die each year from vaccine-preventable illnesses. Thanks to a breakthrough deal with 6 pharmaceutical companies to lower the price of a pentavalent vaccine, many of these deaths will be averted. The Vaccine Alliance, Gavi, funds immunization programs in developing countries. It estimates 5.7 million fewer children will die between 2011 and 2020 in 80 countries that will procure these cheap vaccines. Director of UNICEF Supply and Procurement Headquarters, Chanel Hall, says it has taken 16 years to bring down the price of the vaccine.
From next year through 2019, we'll be able to procure this pentavalent vaccine, which protects children against diphtheria, tetanus, pertussis, hepatitis B, and hemophilus influenza B for less than $1 a dose. And that is half the price that we've paid this year, this month, this week.
Hall says that averages out to 84 cents a dose. She says 90% of the world's children under 5 who die from vaccine-preventable diseases live in countries where vaccines are not fully funded by donors. She says the lower vaccine cost will make a difference between life and death.
This price decrease will generate a savings of over $366 million for donors and governments who finance the vaccine. And it's important for access and also for pressures on national budgets.
Hall says by 2020, donors will pay less as national budgets increasingly cover the cost of the pentavalent vaccines themselves. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Somali authorities have arrested Al Jazeera journalist Hamza Mohamed, along with a fixer and a cameraman, after they returned to the capital from territory controlled by Al-Shabaab militants. Information Minister Mohamed Abdi Maria, in an interview with the VOA Somali service, confirmed the arrest of the 3 journalists and says the security forces are questioning them. Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari told the 21 Chibok girls rescued this week that he will redouble efforts to find those still missing 2 years after their kidnapping. Nearly 300 girls were taken from their school in 2014 in Chibok in northeastern Borno State, where Boko Haram has waged a 7-year insurgency aimed at creating an Islamic state, killing thousands and displacing more than 2 million people. That is it for this Thursday, October 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Jonah Cummings, I am James Butte in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very good day.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll look at the role of the Washington, D.C. Mayor's Office of African Affairs. We'll discuss the impact of the office as it seeks to improve the quality of life for the District of Columbia's diverse African-born population. That's next, right here on Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
On November 8th, American citizens will exercise their right to vote and choose their next president. VOA is providing comprehensive coverage of this unique democratic process. Who is going to earn the trust of the American people to lead the nation for the next 4 years? Find out right here on VOA.